Today's daf is Kiddushin Kaf Hey. We're going to start at the bottom of Kiddushin Kaf Daled. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav. The very last part about the... the truth is not the very last part, but another section on the mumim of an Eved and why he goes free. So we're going to continue along that. Refuah Shlema L'Dvor Abadino, as Avram Shimon Ben Chana, Carmela Ben Ni'im, Orli Pnei Bar Bacha, Frida Chaim, Malka Esther Bat Zippor, Daniel Ben Mirim Chayarut, Yosef Ben Rachele, Bat Rivka, Rafael Yeshua Falek Ben Bracha Bat, Yael Mirim Bat Chaya, Rina Chaim Bat Shoshana, Yaakov Ben Rosa, Talia Rachel Bat Tamar, Sarah Alexander, Zizkin Ben Menucha, Yilo Nishma Chana Bat Atar, Reza Bat Sarah, Tzvi Hirsch Ben Yaakov, Halevi Umel. Okay, so we were talking about different mumim of an Eved that he could get, that if a master causes this mum to the Eved, then he goes for free. And we talked about that it had to have certain criteria, that it had to be a mum shegaloi, right? It's something that people see. We're going to talk about what does it mean, galoi, okay? We're going to learn today, we talk about men's private parts, that it's going to be things that are noticeable on the body, even though people necessarily don't see them, okay? It's something that has to be noticeable on the body rather than something internal. Okay, internal can't be seen, or that's going to be part of the question, whether what exactly is this mum shebegaloi. And the other part was einam chuzrim, meaning they won't regenerate, get cured. Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav. Haitalo yateret, let's say he had an extra finger. Okay, the person had an extra finger. V'chatcha, and the master cut this finger off. So would you say that that's, here it's an extra finger, it wasn't a finger he needed. Okay, so they say, Eved Yotzei Behen L'Chirut. He does go free because it was a finger, and we talked about fingers were on the list of things that he goes free for. Amar Rav Huna, V'hu Shenisperet Al Gav HaYad. It's only if the added finger was on the hand, but if the finger was growing out from somewhere else, okay, whatever the case might be, then it's not considered a mum, you know, a problem for him to go free. Okay, now we get an interesting story. Sabe de Nizunya, lo atu le pirke. The elders of the city of Nizunya didn't come to the pirke de Rav Chista, to the lecture of Rav Chista. He was giving a shiur and they didn't come. Amar le Rav Hamnuna, so Rav Chista says to Rav Hamnuna, ziot san inhu. Okay, san inhu seems to be, he says, put them in nidoy, okay, because they didn't come to my shiur. Okay, this is, okay, anyone who didn't show up today, you're in big trouble. You're going to go into nidoy for not showing up to the shiur. Some people say tsan inu is like a, Rashi says that they should be closed up in their house, and it's a lashon of nidoy. In other words, it's sort of saying, you know, stay in your homes. If you're not going to come out to my shiur, then don't come out to anything else. Azal amar lahu, so Rav Hamnuna goes out, like Rav Chista told him, but he said to them, my time alo atu rabbanan lepirka, why didn't you come to the shiur? Amrulei, amai nete. Okay, here's a good critique for, like a criticism for rabbis. They say, or leaders, they say to him, amai nete, why should we have come? To be inamine milta velo pashalam. We asked him a question, he didn't answer us. Okay, you see how affected people can become when they ask people questions, right? This happens very often. People just either don't get around to it or they don't have a good answer. So basically, they say, we asked him a question, he didn't answer. Okay, now we get to a little bit something strange in terms of his reaction. It's not 100% clear to them afresh on what he means, but we'll give some possibilities. Amar lehu, mi bi'itu minai mi divelo pashitna. So he says to him, have you asked me something and I never answered it? Now, what does that mean? They weren't saying, remember, Rav Hamnuna is the messenger. They weren't talking about Rav Hamnuna that he didn't answer a question.
Did I ever do the same thing?
Right. So he's sort of saying, did I ever do the same thing? But I think what he really means to say, and some of the freshmen support this, is that why don't you ask me a question and see if I can answer it? Like, I'll answer your question. In other words, it seems that it wasn't that, oh, he didn't take the time to answer our question, that wasn't the issue. It was that they thought he didn't know the answer to questions. And he's trying to say, well, if you ask me a question and I give you an answer, and I'm Rav Hamnuna's student, so obviously, I'm Rav Chista's student, obviously Rav Chista would also know the answer. And he's almost like testing them and saying, you know, prove to me that he really, like, almost like he doesn't believe that Rav Chista didn't answer a question. So he says, throw a question at me. Now we're going to see whether are they going to ask him the same question or a different question? Okay? In other words, you would think that they were going to ask him the exact question that they had asked Rav Chista to see, does he know the answer to that question? However, from the end of the story, it's going to be kind of clear, or at least it seems like it, otherwise the story doesn't make so much sense, that really, they're going to ask him a different question and not necessarily the same question. And I'll just already be makdim the end so that you know what I'm saying, so I'm making sense here, is that in the end, he can't answer the question. He goes to Rav Chista and tells him what happened. And Rav Chista says, well, you could have answered them like this. So it was a question that Rav Chista obviously had an answer to. Okay? So therefore, it's probably unlikely that they're asking him the exact same question. That's why I said here we get to some little kink in the story. It doesn't make so much sense. Like why he said, ask me the question, and then it seems like they ask him a different question anyway. So anyway, that's what happens. He says, you know, did you ask me something and I, you know, try me, basically, and I'll answer you. So ba'amine, eved shesur so rabo bebeitzim, if an eved was castrated in his testicles, mahu kimum shebegaloi dami olo, is this something that's noticeable or not noticeable? Do we count this as a mum shebegaloi or do we not? Well, guess what? Like I told you, lo hava biyade. Okay, so we started off with saying, right, it's almost like he was a little bit showing off and saying, well, ask me any question, right? And then he got stuck because they asked him and then he didn't know what to do. Okay, he didn't know the answer to this question. So now, right, it could be these guys were just nunikim, and they were trying to stump him, you know, and that's why they posed this question particularly, because they thought maybe they could stump him on this one.
Which they did,
exactly. So now that he can't answer them, you could see these guys are, you know, want to start up. So Amru lo, mashmecha, what's your name? Amar lehu, Hamnuna. He says, my name is Hamnuna. Amru le, lav Hamnuna, they say to him, you're not Hamnuna, ela karnuna. Okay, they insult him basically. What does karnuna mean? Okay, we'll give you two interpretations. One interpretation looks at his name Hamnuna and says Hamnuna sounds like Hamnuna. Now what's Ham? It's hot. Nuna is a fish. So his name almost sounds like hot fish. So what do they call him? Karnuna. You're a cold fish, meaning you're a fish that's gone bad. Okay? That's actually a reasonable interpretation in terms of like the, I mean, it's not exactly, but the other one says that karnuna comes from kranot, or maybe even like karen, like the corner. It's like you should sit in the corner, or you should sit like in the kranot. That's I think it's interpreted as like a wagon, you know, and like not in the Beit Midrash.
Here they say that it's somebody who hangs out on the corners gossiping rather than studying.
Okay, right. Somebody's hanging out in the corner. I guess that's when they say kranot. They really meant from karen, and not a...
As opposed to sitting in the Beit
Midrash. Exactly. It's saying, you know, that's your place in the corners and not in the Beit Midrash. Atta le kamed Rav Chista. Now he comes to Rav Chista, obviously kind of depressed about this, right? Amar le. So he tells Rav Chista the story. Rav Chista, Amar le, says to him, Matnita ba'u minech. They asked you, what they asked you was a Mefurish Mishnah. Now it's not exactly a Mefurish Mishnah, but it's a Braita on a Mishnah. In other words, there's a Mishnah. We've seen this before. This actually came up at the very beginning of Yevamot, if you remember. There were the 15 Sarot and Sarotehen and all that. And then Tane Alan, there was this other opinion that, you know, said something a little different. So often they learned Mishnayot and then they learned Braitot on that same Mishnah to, you know, kind of expand on it. So he says, the Mishnah says like this, Ditnan, Esrim va'arba'a rashei evarim sheba'adam, kulam ein metab'im mishum michya. Okay, now we're talking about types of nigaim. Okay, we're going to switch topics here. We're going to do this back and forth. All different topics about type these rashei evarim that we talked about when it came to the mum, if you remember. We learned shem ba'ayin in the psukim, and then they darshan also to include from the Miut v'ribuy, the ribuy miut v'ribuy, they were mirabe, also things that are like it, in which case they came to the conclusion that Rashi Evarim were the same as the Shem V'ayin. And therefore, I'm talking about right there, the extremities, the things you can see. So, there's 24 of them, and kulam emetame mishum michya. So the topic here is tzara'at, okay, and there's a halacha about tzara'at that if it... Right, that their hat, right? So the Kohen has to look at the nega. Now, when he looks at the nega, he has to be able to see the whole thing. Now, look at my finger. If I have something on my finger on both sides, the Kohen can't see all the sides at once. Okay? So, therefore, he can't, it's not going to be considered a nega tzarat if it's on these evarim because he can't see them. They're emetame mishum michya because the Kohen can't see the whole thing at once. So, what are these? Eluhem rashe etzbaot, yadayim, raglayim, okay, like the fingers, the toes. Virashe oznayim, okay, your ears also, you can't see both sides. V'rosh ha-chotem, the nose. V'rosh ha-gvia, that's the man's organ, the penis. V'rashei dadim shebi'isha, and the woman's breasts. Okay, all these things you can't see all of them at once. Now that's the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. We're still in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer af shebi'ish. Even the Rashi Dadim of an Ish, even a man's breast, there's a whole machloket about it in terms of their size. Are they protruding enough that you can't see all sides of them, right? Obviously, it would sort of depend on the person. V'taneyala, bikul, and then there was a bright on this, and what does it say? Bikulam eved yotze behen l'chirut. All of these things, these are the same Rashi Varim that an eved would go to chirut for. Rebbe Omer, af haserus. Rebbe says even castration would also. Ben Azeh Omer Af HaLashon, even the tongue. So now we'll get back to this tongue and these two opinions here, whether they disagree with each other or not. But right now, what are they going to say here? How does this prove our case? Amar Mar, Rebbe Omer Af HaSerus, Serus Demai. Ilema Serus Degid, Hainu Gvia. Okay, in other words, is it going to be castration through the penis or is it going to be castration through the testicles? So that's going to be the debate here. So what's the issue? Remember, he asked about the testicles. So now they're going to say, when he says serus, he can't possibly mean, right, the penis, because that was already listed in the Gvia, in the Mishnah. So if he's adding something, it's got to be adding something else. So therefore, they're going to assume serus de beitzim. Okay, so there's his proof, okay, that serus de beitzim is considered Rashi Farim and the Eved would go behem l'chirut, because remember, it said, right? For all these things, that was how the Braita started. B'kulam eved yotzei behem l'chirut. And there's your answer. So Rav Chisda says it's an obvious answer because it's found in this Braita. Okay, again, the Braita doesn't say it explicitly, but you have to assume that that's what the Braita means. Rebbe Omer af haserus, v'rebbe lashon lo. Now when it says, Rebbe says even serus, and Ben Azai says even the lashon, it sounds like there's a disagreement, right? That each one wouldn't hold like the other. So now they're going to ask on each of them. So Rebbe doesn't think that the Lashon is a Rashi Varim. Ureminhu, there's a contradiction. When we comes to, now, like I said, we're going to flip different topics. When it comes to sprinkling the Mechatat, do you remember with the Para Aduma? So they make this water mixture and then they sprinkle it on a person. Now, how does this work? They just sprinkle a little bit onto a person, onto part of his body. And it has to be, again, we're going to see all these issues that we're going to see have to do with something that's exposed. Okay, so you have to sprinkle it on a part of the body that's exposed. So what does it say here? Hare misha hayam mazeh v'nitzeh hazaah al piv. Rebbe omer hizah v'chachamim omrim lo hizah. So Rebbe, who's our person that we're talking about here, right? He said about the serus and not the lashon. So when it comes to hazaah, what does he say? That if you sprinkle on someone's mouth, it works. So now they're going to say, my lav al lishono. Obviously, if you sprinkle on his mouth, it works. It's part of his exposed part of his body. So the assumption is that when it, specifically, there's a machloket about whether you sprinkle on his mouth or not, there's a debate about it. It must be, what are they talking about? The inside of the mouth and his tongue. And there, Dr. Rebbe says his tongue is considered exposed. What's the issue with the tongue? Why would it be a debate if it's exposed or not? Because sometimes it's in and sometimes it's out. Okay, so.
Concentrating.
What?
Concentrating,
because
they stick out
their tongue. Yeah, fair, when they're concentrating. Very good. Okay, so now what do they say? Lo, you don't have to assume that it's al lashono, and therefore Rebbe would contradict himself. You could say al sfatav. Okay, it means his lips. So then they say, what do you mean? Can you see where this is going? What do you mean? Al sfatav pshita, right? Obviously, your lips are exposed. No, because ma'u detem azim nidachalim sfate kamash malan. Your lips are sometimes open and sometimes closed, right? Your lips could be like this. Right? They wouldn't be showing. And therefore, you might have thought that they're somewhat exposed, somewhat not exposed, and therefore, or you could even say that part of your lips are inside of us, you know, like where exactly the... So, okay. So then, we can say that it's svatayim, and therefore it doesn't contradict. V'hatanya, wait a minute, that all sounds good, except there's a braita specifically about this that says alishono specifically. We've had this many times, right, where they try to explain a braita in a certain way, and they say, but there's another version of this braita that says exactly that. So, right, that this one's unclear, it could go either way, but that one spells it out. So it's spelled out specifically alishono. V'otanya, there's another braita that says, v'shenital rov halashon. Okay, this is, I'm blanking one second what the case is. Shenital Rova Lashon. Ah, right. So Rashi says, if you look in Rashi, remind me, Linyam Mumei Bechor. Okay, and the Mumim of a Bechor, also they talk about there, you also need Galoi for a Bechor. Remember, the Bechor of a Behema goes to the Kohen. And if it has a Mum, right, then it's different. So then they list all the mumim, and again, it has to be something revealed, and they say Rov HaLashon. That's also, if there's a mum, a Rov HaLashon, it's a problem. So here you see again that it's considered in the list of mumim shebegalui. And Rebbe Omer, oh, sorry, Shenital Rov HaLashon is Tanakama, and Rebbe Omer, Rov HaMedaber shebelishonel. He says it's not Rov HaLashon, it's Rov of the part that comes out when you speak. Okay, in other words, that the part that's not connected to your mouth, the part that's more open at the bottom, right? Doesn't have the connecting piece underneath. That part, it has to be, in as he's giving a smaller shiur. If it's on most of that part, right, he's more machmir in a sense. You're going to get a mum more easily because it's not rov. When you calculate rov, you don't calculate based on the entire tongue. You only calculate based on the part that's coming out. So, in a sense, it could be more mekel. If the mum is inside, then he wouldn't consider it a mum. So you could say that. But, okay. So now, what do you see? Again, he considers at least part of the Lashon as a part that's going to be a mum, a shebegaloi. So, Ela, Rebbe Omer, Seirus, Velome, Baya, Lashon. Okay, so you have to explain that what Rebbe says is Seirus is also a mum, but obviously, and as I don't even need to say it, it was obvious to him that the Lashon. That's why he didn't say it, because it was just obvious. Okay, so now we're going to assume that Rebbe means the Lashon and the Seirus. Okay. Ben Azai Amar Lashon, Aval Seirus Lo. Okay, so now we're going to say that Ben Azai says Lashon, but then obviously, right, if Rebbe said Seirus and obviously Lashon, so if Ben Azai is disagreeing, he's saying only Lashon, but Seirus not. Umay, so if that's the case, why does he say af halashon? Look at the lashon of Ben Azai. It's in the first wide line. Ben Azai Omer af halashon, even the lashon, even sounds like he's including more things than Rebbe, right? So they say it doesn't make sense to say the umay af. So what are the answer? Akamaita. The af is not relating to what Rebbe said. It's relating to the other opinion, the Mishnah, really, right? And he's saying I'm including in your list even lashon. Okay, now. So then the obvious question is, ihachi, then the order of the braita makes no sense, because he should be listed first, right? Ihachi, niktama de Ben Azai bereisha. If Ben Azai is relating exactly to the braita and saying, I'm including Lashon, then Rebbe's saying, I'm including not only Lashon, but also Seirus, it would make much more sense to order the braita like that. Rebbe should come second. So now they're going to say, Tana Shama'ali de Rebbe v'kav'a, Vishamala de Ben Azai Vitane Umishna Lozazamim Koma. Okay, here's an interesting thing in terms of the way these braita were passed down. So what do they say? The Tana first heard Rebbe's opinion. He didn't know about Ben Azai. So he first heard Rebbe's opinion and started, you know, making up a braita. And then he was Mishane in the braita. He repeated it, repeated it. That's what they would do, right? So he learned the braita in a particular way. Then he found out later about Ben Azai's opinion. So and Ben Azai's opinion was passed down to him with the Lashon of Af, because that was how, right, the other people who had Ben Azai, who didn't have Rebbe.
What door was Ben Azai?
It's a good question. When he came, he was with Rebbe Akiva. He was a Tana. He came probably a little before Rebbe, because he's the time of Rebbe Akiva, right? Rebbe Akiva and Ben Azai, they're all Nichnasu Pardes. I think he married Rabbi Akiva's daughter, if I remember correctly.
Came after, just because they heard him after.
Right, exactly. Not because of chronology. Here, let's look. Akiva. That's not on this list here.
Next page.
Oh, the next page. Okay. You look for it in the meantime. I don't see it. So, but he was definitely, I think he married his daughter, so that would put him a little before Rebbe. But anyway, the point is whether chronologically how it happened is not important. It's how it got passed down, how these braitot got organized. So, one had this type, this wording of Ben Azai said, af the Lashon, which was connected to the Mishnah. And the other one that the Tana got hold of first was Rebbe's opinion, which said the Seirus, which included the Lashon. Okay, now you'd have to say if it was learned separately, you would have assumed that Rebbe would have added the Lashon also, right? Unless he just thought it was so obvious it didn't need mentioning. And then he put it all together, but when he put it all together, he already had Rebbe first, and Mishnah lo zaza mimkoma. The way he learned it was the way he was going to keep it that way, because, again, when you use memorization skills, it's part of it is not that there's a rule that Mishnah lo zaza mimkoma, but the Perush is really, he wasn't capable of switching it, right? When you're used to doing something in a particular way, it's very hard to change it. So therefore, he kept that out of Ben Azai, and that's why it's out of order. Okay. Amar Ula. Everyone agrees when it comes to dine tuma and tahara, digaloi hu etzal hasheret. Now what happens? If a sheret, what does it say? My taima ashir yigabo amarachmana. Vahainami bar negiyahu. When you have tumat maga, okay, that means something touches it. It has to be something, again, that's bigaloi. Okay, it can only touch something that's bigaloi. Now, what do they say here? That when it comes to the Lashon, since the Lashon could be sticking out and it could actually come in contact with something Tameh, so therefore, Tumat Maga is going to be applicable to a Lashon. That makes sense. Okay? But Le'inyan Tvila, but when it comes to Tvila, okay, right, this is going to be relevant for anyone going to the Mikvah, Kitamundame, it's considered hidden. My Taima, Urachat Besaroba Mayim Amarachmana. My besaro me'avrai, afko me'avrai, right? When you go to the mikvah, do you open your mouth to let the water into your tongue? No, because it says, rachatz besaro b'mayim, what's on the outside of your body, not anything that's inside. Okay, and therefore, anything inside your body doesn't need to come in contact with the water. So therefore, we now see a difference with the lashon between dine tuma, where it's considered as if it's revealed, versus dine mikvah, where it's considered inside and not needed to be tovel.
But the eyes would be the same because you close your eyes when you go to the mikvah.
Right, your eyes also. Exactly. It's the same thing. Your eyes are open and exposed, but when you go in the mikvah, they're considered inside your body, basically. Yeah, exactly. So now, lo nechleku, so now they're going to tell us that everyone agrees, okay, this is what Ula says, everyone agrees about Shema, because remember, there's this machloket about the Lashon. So now they're going to say, because remember, even if you say that Ben Azai and Rebbe agree about it, the Tanakama of the Mishnah, right, the Mishnah didn't include them on the list. So now we're going to say that that whole machloket is not about Tuma, because Tuma, everyone agrees, Tuma Maga, that it's galut, because it can, v'chol asher yigabo, it can be touched. When it comes to Mikvah, everyone agrees that it definitely doesn't need, okay, although we'll see maybe. Okay, hold off. Lo nechleku ela l'inyan hazah. But when it comes to hazah, that's where they have the machloket. Okay, and also the evet. Rebbe medamele l'tuma. Okay, but when it comes to hazah, this is what the machloket is. Rebbe says hazah. Think about hazah. What is hazah? It comes from a tum'ah, and it's curing you like a mikvah. So therefore, the question is going to be, are we going to hold like dine tuma, or are we going to hold like dine mikvah? So, Rebbe medamele l'tuma, Rabbana medamele l'tvila. Okay? Each one, you know, makes it similar to the other, and that's why they come to their conclusion. Utravayu b'hai krak ha-miflige. Their machloket is based on the same pasuk, but you'll see how they darshan this pasuk. The pasuk by Paraduma says like this, okay? Bamibra yutet yutet. V'hizah ha-tahor al ha-tameh b'yom ha-shlishi u-b'yom ha-shvi'i v'chit'o b'yom ha-shvi'i. Okay, and he, chit'o is the key word here. Chit'o is he makes it, he purifies it basically. You know, he cures it from its impurity on the seventh day. V'chibes b'gadav v'rachatz b'mayim v'teher b'erev. The pasuk starts out with, hizator ala tameh, and it mentions tuma. Follow? Then in the middle of the pasuk it says v'chit'o, and at the end of the pasuk it says v'rachatz b'mayim v'teher b'erev. So the whole question is the v'chit'o, the haza'ah process, is it going to be linked to the tum'ah in the beginning of the pasuk, or is it going to be linked to the tahara, the mikvah part, at the end of the pasuk? So you follow? It's right in the center in the pasuk between tum'ah and tefillah. And not exactly tefillah, because it's not tefillah, but rachas besaro, it's the same terminology. Right here it actually is, right, here it's actually mikvah, right, because it's talking about, he has to, the person who did it has to immerse. Go and immerse in the mikvah. So now, what does it say? So how do they darshan it? Rabbanan savre v'chit'o b'yom ha-shvi'i v'chibes b'gadav v'rachatz b'mayim. Rabbanan, sorry, I skipped something. Rebbe savar, sorry, the line before. Rebbe Savar vihizat or latameh b'yom shlishi b'yom shvi v'chito. Right, it's connected with the tumah. V'rabbanan savrei v'chito b'yom shvi v'chibes b'gadav v'rachatz b'mayim. It's connected to the second part. So now they say, why isn't each one going to hold like the other? V'rabbanan nami nitmei l'tumah. Why don't we say it's like tumah, like the beginning part of the pasuk? So what do they say? Tahara mitara havale l'melaf. Since the process of hazaa is litaher, so we're going to compare it to the tahara process of the mikvah. That's the assumption. We're going to go with what it's doing, right? The function of it is to be mitaher. Therefore, compare it to the tahara process of the mikvah. The Rebbe, so that sounds pretty logical, right? So Rebbe nidmei l'tefila. So why doesn't Rebbe say it's like tefila? So what do we say? Bechibes begadav hipsika inyan. In other words, the chibes begadav is already onto a new topic. Now we're talking about the person who did the mechatat. You know, how does he get out of his problem now? The heat became tame, but we've already moved off of the guy who's getting purified by the mechatat, and therefore he connects it with the beginning of the pasuk because he says these words constitute a break. So therefore, it certainly can't be connected to that. Okay. V'savar Rebbe l'inyan tefila ketamun dami. Does Rebbe really hold? Now remember, what did I say when it comes to tefila? That you don't need to get the inside of your mouth. The water doesn't need to come in contact with it. So that's what Rebbe holds. So therefore, we're going to say, does Rebbe really hold that the inyan tefila is ketamun dami? That when it comes to tefila, right, and then he learns from here to the mechatat, that it's ketamun, that it's hidden. Okay? And therefore, this is going to be a problem. Why? V'hamar Rebbe, namar Rav Ada, namar Rabbi Yitzchak, maseh b'shivcha shel Beit Rebbe, shetavla ve'alta. First of all, you see something interesting here, that the shvachot also did tefila. Because remember, they don't do mitzvah aseh shehazman grama.
This may have been the one that, it may not have been something they did regularly, as much as this was the one that converted her effectively to.
You think it was her conversion tefila. That's what you
think? We know that one had to have happened.
Uh-huh. Right. So I saw that actually they do talk about that they would go in the mikvah.
It makes sense that they still would have. They should right. Under those mitzvot.
Because the whole question, do they need to go in the mikvah, is can they, do they contract tumah? Are they part of the whole dinei tumah v'tahara? And therefore, if they become tameh, do we have to be mitahara them because they're working in the house? They're touching everything?
If she's held to the same mitzvot as a woman.
Right, so then presumably yes. She would need to, exactly. So there was a maseh b'shivcha shel Beit Rebbe, shetavla v'alta. So she went, dunked, came out, v'nimtza etzem ben shineha, and they found, right, when you go to the mikveh, do you floss your teeth, right? They always say you have to floss your teeth and get stuff out. There's even a minhag, right, not to eat meat on the day before you go to the mikveh. There's a minhag about that because you'll get stuff stuck in your teeth again. Nowadays we have dental floss and good methods to get that out, so maybe it's less of a concern, but there was this minhag that some people are mockpit on, not to eat meat on that day. So she found a bone between her teeth. V'hitzricha Rebbe tefila acheret. Okay, so now what do you say? Wait a minute.
What does it matter?
If the water can't get in anyway, what does it matter if you have stuff stuck between your teeth? So what's the answer? There's a famous concept. If you don't know it, it's good we're learning it. Nihi debiat mayim lo be'inan. Even though you don't necessarily need the water to get there, makom hara'oy lavo b'mayim be'inan. You need something that the water can get to. Okay, where is this most relevant in mikvah? If you have an ear issue and your ears can't get wet, like you can't get water in your ears, okay? There's people who have trouble with water in their ears, or let's say you have an ear infection when you go to Tovah. So what can you do? You can put cotton in your ears. So you say, well, how can you put cotton in your ears? There's a chatzitza. But if you were to stay in the water long enough, the water would get through the cotton and get into your ear. Now, even though you're going to go in for a second, and therefore the water's not going to get in, since technically speaking the water can get in, it's not a chatzitza that's totally blocking and sealing it off, therefore you can go in the mikveh with the cotton balls in your ears.
But not with like plastic.
Right, so it could be, I'm not sure. Right, I assume if... Again, it's all a question of can the water really permeate? So depending on what kind of earplugs you're talking about, if they're not the best earplugs in the world, even if they're plastic, they should, you know, it should be fine as long as, you know, they're not amazing and water could ultimately seep through. But if they're very solid and no water can get in, then they're going to be more problematic.
Which answers the question I had a moment ago about contact lenses. If your eyes are closed, why does it matter?
Right, exactly. So it's the same thing as contact lenses. Very good. So now... Okay, and this comes from a sugya that we actually learned before, okay, which is It needs a makomer oil of obamayim. How do we know this? Kidi Rabbi Zera, we learned this before. De Amar Rabbi Zera, we learned this in Yevamot, I believe. At the end of Yevamot. Kol ha ra'oi lebila ein bi'ila ma'akevet bo. She'ein ha ra'oi lebila bi'ila ma'akevet bo. Okay, what's this? This is a sugi menachot. Okay, there's a, we bring a mincha, okay, the amount that we can put into a kli, okay, it has to be, you don't bring a mincha of 61 esronot, okay, an isaron, okay, 61 isronot, because once you, it has, okay, there's a, you know how we always say about the mincha belula b'shemen, has to be mixed with oil, right? It's this solet, this type of fine flour that they would mix with oil. Now, it never says in the Torah that you have to mix it with oil. There's no tzivoy, okay? Livlol. It always just says it's shemen belula b'mincha, right? That there's shemen mixed up with the mincha. So they say, based on that, l'chatchila you're supposed to mix it. But if you didn't mix it, it's okay as long as there was a potential to mix it. And the assumption is, okay, now you have to say, obviously it depends what size kli, but there was an assumption that the basic size, the standard size kli, could fit 60 esronim and still be able to mix it up. But if you put more than that into the bowl, it would be too much, right? You ever try to put a batter into something that it just doesn't mix and everything starts falling out? So more than that, you can't. That's how they learn this halacha, that more than that, you can't, because it's not something that you could potentially mix. Okay? And therefore, that's what. So now they compare. Some people say it's not a great comparison, but let's just assume the way the simple reading of the Gemara, that just like Rabbi Zera said there, that as long as it's ra'oi levila, it can be mixed, then even if it's not mixed, it's okay. Same thing with the mikvah. If the water can potentially get in there, even though the water doesn't have to get in there, then it's good. Okay, so now they're going to tell us that this whole machloket about the going back to the beitzim, okay, if you're misareis someone in the testicles, whether that is something that the eved goes free for, like Rabbi said, or like Tanakama, you know, like the Tana and the Mishnah said, you don't. It's based, there's another, we see somewhere else that there's a machloket Tanaim about this. Kitanai. Uma'uch v'katut v'natuch v'karut. Okay, I'll translate these. Ma'uch is bruised, katut is crushed, Natuk is torn and karut is cut. Kulam bebetzim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda.
Ouch.
Yeah. Unpleasant. Okay. So these are, I'm sorry, I forget the context of this. So here was. Right. Ah, right. Mum. These are talking about mums in an animal, okay? If an animal has a mum, again, it has to be a mum shebegaloi. So if an animal has a mum and it's one of these things, that the testicles are either bruised, crushed, torn, or cut, okay? And they're talking about the bebetzim, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda says that these are talking about the testicles. Bebetzim, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. And then, all right, so now we're taking a break. Before we see the other opinion, the Gemara is going to say, bebetzim velo begid. What do you mean? It's only a problem if these are in the testicles and not in the actual organ itself? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Ella, no, what he means is kulam af bebetzim, even in the testicles. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov omer kulam begid. They're only problematic if they're in the gid, but not in the beitzim. Okay, and that's our exact machloket. Are the beitzim, in other words, the whole question is, are the beitzim considered begaloi or not? Rabbi Yossi omer ma'uch vekatut af bebetzim, natuch vekarut begid in bebetzim lo. So he distinguishes between whether it's bruised or crushed, because he claims that bruised or crushed testicles are going to be noticed, right? That's going to be a mum that you see on the body. Remember I said, bigaloi doesn't mean that everyone can see it. It's if you look at it, you'll see that they're bruised or crushed. But if they're natuk v'karut, they're torn or cut, the assumption is we're talking about on the inside, internally. And therefore, that's not going to be, he claims that the beitzim, you're not going to notice. Okay, only begid they're going to be a problem. Okay, finished with all that talk. Now we're going to move on to the new Mishnah. Okay, we're done with the women. We're done with the Eved Ivri. We're done and the Shivcha Adama Ivriya. We moved on to the Eved Kanani and Shivcha Kanani. Now we're moving on to Behema. Okay, we're going to see right now when we talk about how Behema is niknet. We're going to see that it's treated more like metaltalin rather than when you do a kinyan. Okay, we're going to learn here that. Metaltalin can't be acquired with money, okay? Whereas land can be acquired with money. And all the previous things we talked about could be acquired with money because we treat them like land, okay, like something more significant. Whereas the behemot are going to be treated like metaltalin, in which case kesef is not going to be an effective kinyan. So behemagasa nikne b'misira, v'hadaka b'hagbaha divrei Rabbi Meir. Now we're going to see that we're going to talk about three different types of kinyanim. Right now we only see two. One is hagbaha. Now the assumption is that hagbaha is the best type of kinyan. Okay, you lift something off the ground, three tvachim. Okay, that's what we see in a kinyan chalipin when you take a handkerchief, right? There's different types of kinyanim. Some are symbolic, okay, like a kinyan chalipin, let's say, and some are showing ownership, where you're doing an act that shows I own this. We saw that with the land. If you do chazaka, where you start working the land, that shows ownership. Okay, whereas some are more symbolic, like passing over money. That's more of a symbolic type of thing. So here we have hagbaha, which is lifting it, and misira is passing it. Now, some people say passing it means that the person has to physically pass the animal to the other person. Okay, now what does it mean? You're talking about a behemagasa. What's behemagasa, behemadaka? Behemagasa are the big animals, like horses, ox, cow, all those. And by the way, even a baby of these would be considered behemagasa. It's a category. Okay, whether you're little or big, it doesn't matter. Versus the behemadaka, like the sheep and the lamb and those kinds, which even they can be huge, but they're still in the category of behemadaka. There's all different distinctions between them in all sorts of halachot. So this one obviously is going to be relevant in terms of, right, you can't necessarily lift big animals. So therefore they're going to say the gasaz nikne b'misira and the daka b'hagbaha. The little one you can lift up. But the other one, since you can't lift it, you suffice with Masira. Now, what's Masira? So Masira generally is, you know, a good example of Masira is passing the reins of the animal to the other person. So you have a horse, you have the reins, you just pass him the reins, and that's, now, there's a debate about whether the seller has to actually physically take whatever he's going to take, you know, the animal, the reins, and pass them physically to the other person, or he can say, go take it, and then the person takes it, and that's considered also Masira, even though he didn't physically hand it hand to hand, but the other person did take it. The other kinyan we're going to talk about at the end is Meshicha. Meshicha is pulling the animal toward you, okay? There's all the room, you could maybe pull it into a reshut that's yours, you could pull it, okay? There's some sort of pulling. There's a big debate among the Mefarshim whether Masira is a better form than Meshicha, or Meshicha is a better form than Mesira, and therefore there's a big debate among the Rishonim, Rashi versus the Ri and Tosfot, about whether when he says Mesira, does he mean and also Meshicha, or does he mean only Mesira? And the other opinion, which we're going to see in a minute, Rabbi Lezer, Bachamim, or mean Behemadaka, Niknep, and Meshicha, okay, where he's going to say Behemadaka. Right, the assumption is from the Tanakhama that the Behema Zaka, it's actually Rabbi Meir, that the Behema Gasa is Niknepe Mesira, and the Daka is only Bahagbaha. So comes Rabbi Lezer and Chachamim, and they say the Daka is Niknepe Meshicha. The question is going to be if Meshicha is considered as a lesser type of, you know, not as strong, then he's going to say, well, also Mesira would work. Right, it's a big debate. I'm not going to go into all the details because the logic could go in both directions. Okay, there's a total machloka between the Ri and Rashi about how to understand this. Which one is more obvious than the other, and therefore which one would be included in which case or not? Okay. By the way, there's a good chart in the Schottenstein about Rashi and Tosfot here. Okay, so if you don't, right, you can see it where how the opinions fall out. Okay, so again, the daka according to Tanakam is only bahag baha, according to Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Lezer and Chachamim say even b'meshicha. Okay, and the behemagasa, it seems it's nikneip b'mesira, and that's across the board. Darish Rab b'kimchuna, behemagasa nikneip b'meshicha. So again, behemagasa, what did we say? Nikneip b'mesira, and no one disagreed with that. All of a sudden comes Rav, and he says, it's nikneip b'meshicha. Okay, so again, the assumption is that when they said Mesira, they meant only Mesira, because Mesira is stronger. Let's take Rashi's approach. The Mesira is stronger than Meshicha. And therefore, Rav is giving this chidush that it's even Niknei b'Meshicha. That seems, right, to go against the Mishnah. So, Eshkachinu Shmuel l'tamidei de Rav. Shmuel finds the Talmidim of Rav. Amar lehu, Miyam Rav behem agasa Niknei b'Meshicha? Did he really say that? V'ha'ana b'Mesira tanan. And our Mishnah says it's b'Mesira. B'Rav nami b'Mesira amar. And Rav himself said it's nikne b'Mesira. Okay, we don't know where, but the assumption is Shmuel knew that Rav said that. So now, there's a question how to read these three words. This is always what happens when it's not punctuated. The truth is it's not so relevant in terms of the meaning, but it's just interesting if you don't have punctuation. So, some people say the next three words are Hadr be mehahi. It's part of the question of Shmuel. Was he chozer bo from what he said originally? Or it's saying Hadr be mehahi. He was chozer bo from what he said, and it's the beginning of the answer. Okay, like I said, it doesn't really matter either which way. But anyway, they're going to say, in any case, the context is going to be that, the content is going to be that he was chozer bo. Because hu da amar ki haitana, he holds like the Tana who holds. Here we have a braita. Titanya v'chachamim omrim, zo v'zo nikne b'mashich. Chachamim say both are done with Mashiach. Okay, here we have a new opinion now. Both the Behema Gasa and the Behema Daka can be kone by Mashiach. And Rav holds like this opinion. Rabbi Shimon Omer, and this is going to lead into our how do you buy a peel, according to Rabbi Shimon, okay, how do you buy an elephant? Rabbi Shimon Omer, v'zo v'zo b'hagbaha. He says, a Behema Daka and a Behema Gasa need hagbaha. Nothing else works. So now they're going to have a big question. Matkif la Rav Yosef, ela me'ata, peel the Rabbi Shimon b'me yikne. Okay, literally ask this question, how do you purchase an elephant? Okay? How can that possibly be? Obviously, you can ask it by, you know, a big ox or something else also.
Sounds
but
more interesting.
He figures, right, pick the biggest possible animal. How on earth is you going to be able to buy a peel? Amar Le, right, you could just say, well, maybe Rabbi Shimon didn't know from, you know, elephants weren't part of his, people weren't buying elephants. Right, when I was out in the Far East, just if we're talking about buying elephants, I learned that it's not so expensive to buy an elephant, it's to feed an elephant. Apparently, it costs $5,000 a month to feed an elephant, okay? So that, because one of my daughters obviously said, oh, I really would love to have an elephant. So anyway, when we found that out, I said, you know. Right, they did. Right.
They must have
been there were elephants. The question is, were people really buying, you know, was he thinking about it when he talked about this, you know? Okay. So, because remember, this question is being asked many generations later, right? Rabbi Yosef is third or fourth generation Emoraim. It's probably third generation Emoraim, right? Rabbi Shimon Zatana. So anyway, he says, well, how are we going to do this? So Amar Le'abaye b'chalipin. Oh, you do the symbolic. In other words, he would agree that a chalipin would work here. And the assumption is the chalipin works for all of these. They just didn't mention it in the Mishnah. In other words, they were talking about other types of kinyanim, the non-symbolic types, right? In other words, the Mishnah related, remember I said there's two types of kinyanim. So the Mishnah was talking about the ownership ones rather than the symbolic ones. So you would say you just use chalipin. Inami b'socher et mikomo. You could rent the space where the peel is. And then, we talked about this before, that if you own the chatzir, then you can take ownership over what's inside of it. The issue here is you're renting it. You're not exactly buying it. You know, you give the guy a pruta and say, I'm renting the space, and then the space becomes yours right now, and anything that goes into it becomes yours. Rabbi Zera Amar, maybe he comes up with a more creative solution. Maybe arba'a kelim u'minicham tachat raglav. Okay, I'm not going to talk about what's going to happen to those kelim, that they may not exist anymore. But if
or
you
can get the elephant to stand on them.
Well, that you could get the elephant to put his foot up on. The elephant, they move their feet.
All four of them at once?
So that's the thing. So you have to get him to climb up on these four kelim. And then he's, so to speak, you know, he's lifted off the ground. Shmat mina. Okay, well, the other thing is also, right, this isn't hagbaha. The understanding of this is, here, we'll see in a minute, shmat mina kelav shalokech bereshut mocher kana lokech. We saw this before. If you put your kelim into the reshut of somebody else, so in other words, you're in the reshut of the mocher, you know, the guy who's selling it to you, you put down four kelim, the elephant walks onto those four kelim, if he's in the possession of your kelim that are in the reshut of somebody else, you can affect a kinyan that way. Like if you own something within someone's property, somebody puts something on that, you can take ownership of it in that way. Okay, and that's an opinion anyway. So hacha b'mat. Oh, so now that what I wanted to say here is that's an opinion, but not everybody agrees with it. We saw this in Gittin on Ayin Chet, and the Gemara actually, I'm sorry, I read it wrong. The Gemara is asking a question. They're saying shmat mina. Are you trying to say the kelav shalokech bereshut mocher kana lokech? There's a machloket about it, and most of the mafreshim. There's again different ways to read this. Most of the mafreshim saying, and it wasn't decided there. In other words, it's a very basic machloket that there's no. We don't know for sure what the halacha is. So therefore, how could you say that? So what do they say? We're going to give two more options, and that's what we're going to end with. Hacha b'mayaskinam b'simta Either you get the peel to go into a corner of Rashid Arabim, and there's an assumption that the corners of the Rashid Arabim, like if you're in the Cardo, let's say, right, and there's like these corner areas. So if you go into a corner area, which is kind of uninhabited, and you put stuff there, you can actually affect a kinyan on there, even within Rashid Arabim. When it's in the Rashid Mocher, it's a problem, because it all belongs to the Mocher. When you're in the no man's land, and you find this space that's kind of off to the side, then you can affect a kinyan in that space, and that's how you would do it. Inami b'chavilez marot. This is a very creative one. It's a good one to end with. The other thing is that you put these branches and stuff on the ground. And then two ways of reading this. Okay, I'll give you the more standard one, and I'll give you the more creative one. And then the elephant walks onto these. Now, the assumption is they have to be, this goes back to sukkah and reshuyot, they have to be more than three tefachim off the ground. And if he lifts onto them, then basically it's as if you're lifting him up in the air. Because he's no longer attached to the ground. Because above three tefachim, it's no longer attached to the ground. And therefore, that would be like a symbolic type of hagbaha.
Three tefachim before or after the elephant stands on them?
Right, exactly. Right. That's the other question. What's going to happen? Although I thought to myself that probably the reason they chose chavilez marot rather than kelim, according to this interpretation, is because kelim are obviously going to break when the elephant steps on them. You need something very solid. The elephant's not going to break. Especially assuming most of their kelim were kli cheres and stuff. Although I guess you could find matecha, but even that, you know, an elephant could crush them. The other assumption is that if you put these on the ground, he might lift up his feet. I think the sense is to avoid them, and then he'll sort of jump up in the air, and then you'll have had him jump up in the air, okay, and the assumption is only his two front feet. He's not going to obviously jump with all 4 feet, and that's significant enough to be considered hagbah. So, jumping elephants, all sorts of interesting elephants. Ah, yafeh. So I forgot to mention this, but a behemah is a chaya and not, I'm sorry, an elephant is a chaya and not a behemah. But the assumption here is that when they're talking about behemah, they mean all sorts of animals. It's not, there's many times when we distinguish between behemah and chaya, but in this case, we're talking about animals in general. We're using behemah as a general term. That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying.
I thought you can purchase chaya.
Why do you think you could purchase chayot differently than...
free and can't be contained. I don't know, I just assumed that...
Well, first of all, that's why people say that you need a higher standard in general for behemot and chayot because they move. In other words, you need it to be something more showing ownership rather than something, you know, not as strong because they move and they can move out of your issue, you know, and things like that. So, but a behemot and a chayot are no different in that sense. So it's they say that it's the same, right, and this clearly indicates that it's the same halacha. Okay, moving on tomorrow to different kinyanim.